I'm Yossi Selig, and I'm the host of Bandsplain, a show where we explain cult bands and iconic artists by going deep into their histories and discographies. We're back with a brand new season at our brand new home, the Ringer Podcast Network, tackling a whole new batch of artists, from grunge gods to power pop pioneers to new metal legends and many, many more. Listen to new episodes every Thursday, only on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
He's lost it. He's lost it.
Oh, God. I can't help trying to finish and not laugh when I'm doing my Arsenal stuff. I can't stop it because I just don't want it to not. I don't want it to end. Hi everyone, welcome to Righty's House. Hope you are all safe and well. Today we're going to talk about Gabriel Jesus' return for Arsenal in their win over Fulham. We'll talk about Alexander Isak's goal for Newcastle, Bournemouth's win against Liverpool, and a pivotal weekend in the Barclays WSL. And my guests are Musa Kwanga and Flo Lloyd Hughes, Flozza and Mozza. What's happening, guys?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm okay. You know something, Moose, I'm good. Obviously, it's been a bit intense, but I said on the podcast before it all kicked off, it's a perfect distraction. A perfect distraction from what really matters. And for me, they made a hot mess. I'm telling you, this is all from high up. You know, I can't blame my man, Phil Burney, you know, the BBC Sport team. All of this is over a tweet. Gary Lineker riled him, man, over a tweet happening above. At some stage, surely, heads have got a roll. They're the ones. The mismanagement levels of this is, I can't even tell you, but it's done. Everybody knows how I feel about it. But like, I'm just pleased that it's kind of come to something. But there is one person that I want to address directly. The Hampshire councillor, Alexis McAvoy, who's, you know, I just want to say to her, please just keep your fake apology to yourself. I don't give a ras about your apology, whether you disagree with my stance, whether you agree, man. But call it a black hypocrite. A black hypocrite, she called me.
Typical black hypocrite.
Black hypocrite, right? So can I read her? I want to read her statement. She says, I'm aware that a tweet I sent and then deleted has caused offense. And this is the one. This is the line that you'll always get in these racists. Their kind of statement. I did not mean to do so, and I am deeply sorry. A woman in power, she's gone onto Twitter and put out something so racist and said she didn't mean to do so. And then she says, which is another thing that always happens when these people coming out to protect themselves, is I find racism in any form abhorrent. I have therefore reported myself to the monitoring officer at both Hampshire County Council and the New Forest District Council. I have suspended myself from both the Conservative groups pending investigations. And all I'd like to say to her is, please, just, I would love these racists to come out who don't think before they tweet, because you can't imagine what they're saying behind the closed doors. Don't think before they tweet. Own your fucking racism. Don't come with these fake apologies about I didn't mean it, because these people are the ones that give me energy to continue to try and fight for what is right and speak up for what is right. That is it for me. You know, it's been tough, and you know what, it's given me even more vigor and more energy to make sure that people like this are in power, guys, and we have to speak out against these people and do what's right. And that is why I'm so strong in my convictions to all of this.
Well said.
To the football. Arsenal Fulham was a very, very satisfying game to watch for me, guys. Very, very satisfying, simply because you're going into the game and you are actually thinking, Fulham doing well this season, obviously missing Paulinho, which I have to say, Flo Moose is a massive miss.
Outstanding player.
You know, Lukic and Reed, they cut his aggressivity in that area where we actually kind of done a lot of damage to them was vitally missed. But the way that we played in a game that you have to win, playing after Man City again, is showing the kind of maturity and intensity and what can I say? A group that is so together now and know what they need to do. It's really, really just, I'm so happy. I'm so proud of what they're doing right now. Mm. I really am so happy with what they're doing right now. They really controlled that game. And when Arsenal score first, you are in trouble. As we saw it against Leicester. You know, Leicester didn't even have a shot. They're killing teams. Everton at home, Fulham. But then when they don't score first, or when you get a Villa, or when you get an Everton away, or when you get a Bournemouth at home, the franticness of the team, that's for me, Moose, is where I think, okay, you're not going to be able to do an Aston Villa and a Bournemouth on too many occasions. So they have to find a way to make sure that they're not going behind.
Right, yeah.
You know?
And I wonder what percentage of Martinelli's goals are like in the first half, for example, because he really loves getting after people early, doesn't he? Starting that intensity.
But with Trossard, Moose.
I was going to say Trossard was the star of the show for me because I think he's probably been the signing of the window as well in terms of value for money, like an exceptional bargain for that kind of player. And I think a lot of fans probably weren't sure what sort of player they were getting in terms of like, they knew they needed bodies because Arsenal's squad always looked a little light when there were injuries. But I don't think people imagined that he was going to have this much impact. He was going to be the most important player for them almost in the second half of this season. Mm. And he was unbelievable in that game on Sunday. And to have basically the match sewn up in the first half an hour and then just play smart for the second half. Obviously, it was a bad day for Fulham. Their defence was a little bit all over the place and didn't really fix the mistakes that they made for the first few goals and just kind of kept punishing themselves. But at the same time, the second half, Arsenal just played smart. They still created chances. Mm-hmm. They wanted to have as much of the ball as they could. And it was a classy performance and exactly the sort of thing that they needed to reestablish a bit of rhythm, to not have to always tap into kind of like comeback mode, into crazy mode. Just be a little bit calm
What Trossard does, the changing of positions. Mm. You look at where Martinelli scored his goal. It was Trossard was on the left crossing it for him. And you see when Trossard scored, he's been in the middle. They've kind of got the same relationship as Jesus has with Martinelli. Yes. Martinelli needs that moving around move so he can go in there, he can come out here and the vice versa. Jesus will do the same. And so that for me was something that is coming back into the team, and now we've got the actual exponent. That's what he does, Jesus. Right. You know, to come back in and does that. But Trossard now, he's given that manager a massive problem because that is the caliber of player you have to sign if you've got ambition.
The thing with Trossard now is there's absolutely no reason, and Arteta said this, Jesus has to earn his place back. And that's right. Like, you don't just bring Jesus back into a team like that. You just don't, logically, looking at it, because the thing, and I said this on Stadio, like, Trossard's basically a part-time centre-forward, right? Mm. So, and the problem that Nketiah is not a part-time nine. He's a natural nine who runs the channels very, very well. And that's great. That's actually what an elite number nine should do in terms of their positioning. But the wing play, I think, that's the thing that Jesus brings so much to the table. Mm. It would be ironic if Jesus made Arsenal's style as effective as it should be and then couldn't get back in as a starter.
Can you imagine?
For most of the rest of the season. Like, I think he'll return to be a starter at some point. Yeah. But right now,
that's the genuine conversation. And I think Gunner Blog did a piece on The Athletic, I think before the weekend, but it might have been just after that game, saying, actually, the credit to this team and Arteta is the fact that they haven't missed him. When he got injured at the World Cup, proper crisis situation. Yeah. People were really concerned about how the team were going to cope without him. But actually, it's been really impressive how they've managed that situation. And like you say, Moussa, now you're trying to work out, well, where does he fit? Because everyone is playing very well and they've coped really well without him as well.
I'll tell you what that would have done as well, Jesus. And just off of that World Cup injury, because everybody, the whole of the Arsenal world, were worried. And I think what that helped to stop happen in that group of players is what happens when one of your top players is injured. And that is, the guy who comes in, like Eddie came in, and up to this point, every hurdle, every speed bump they've had, they've dealt with, right? So if they were losing games and it wasn't happening, then what would be happening with someone like Jesus, guys, is you start getting people coming over to you and saying, because you're out for a while, so how far are you now?
Right.
You know, this is where the pressure comes from, where people say, oh, he's come back too early. People think, oh, people say things like, oh, see, the manager, they brought him back too early. They don't realize that what happens in those, every single day, remember, you're watching one of your best players trying to get fit. And the pressure that he's under, because everybody, you can imagine, everybody knows how much we need him back. We'll be saying, hey, how you doing? How far is it? Oh, it looks like good. When are you going to be running? When's this going to happen? And you, as somebody who's injured, is thinking, geez, yeah, man, I've got to get back for the team. I've got to get back for the team. This is where the pressure comes from. I've seen it happening. It's happened to me my early time at Arsenal. I remember scoring against Tottenham, doing my thigh, and it was like a six-weeker. And on a regular basis, after the first couple of weeks, because they know that you're in, people are saying, so what are they saying? How long are you going to be? That's when you start feeling like, I want to get done. I want to get fit. And so I think that what Arsenal have done to kind of like eradicate those kind of negative vibes to come into the squad so as then they can continue to play well is that they took that hit. They took that hit very well. And so Jesus could take his time to get back. And I think it's like a direct, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a direct credit to the team that they've been able to do what they've done without him. The young team, the mentality in that team is getting so strong. You can see it in the manager. It's getting so strong that if it happens, like I said it before, I think I said it on the podcast, the people that are coming are looking at this man. They want to come into a dressing room of that age group of players with that ability, with that manager, that stature of club, and they want to get on that ride.
I love when you say that because you always say, I shouldn't say this. I don't know if I've said it before, and I've literally done about 8 shows with you where you reference that point. You're like, guys, the people are coming.
They're coming.
If we build it, they will come.
They're coming.
Don't worry, they're coming.
Names.
Sorry, Musa, go.
No, you're absolutely right. No, just to back that point, you're absolutely right. You're just thinking of the quality of player Arsenal are now attracting. The quality of player they can now buy compared to the quality of player they could have bought 18 months ago is vastly different now. It's a dressing room where you look at that and think, I can add to that, but also they're moving, you know, and they're just not that banter club anymore.
No.
And that's huge. I know we keep saying this, but that's actually massive.
What comes with that is those players want to come, but with the Mudryk situation as well, are Arsenal, how are they still going to ride out that bargaining and negotiating dilemma that they have had for a while now when they're at the top of the table, when they're Premier League champions? They might need to flex their financial muscles a little bit more than what we've seen over the last couple of years because they've been exceptionally shrewd and it's paid off because they've done very well to, you know, Jesus, Zinchenko, Trossard, really good value for money there, really smart acquisitions. But next season, if those big names are going to want to come, like we keep hearing from Ian, they might have to get some big checkbooks out. And are they ready to do that?
I don't know if they have to.
I'm thinking.
They swerved Joao Felix and like he's not done that well at Chelsea. He's brilliant in patches, but the finishing's not there. They didn't get Mudryk. And actually, that might be the best thing that happened to them.
Yeah, because Mudryk wouldn't. I don't care what anyone says, Mudryk, and we've seen up to this point, he wouldn't have done what Trossard's doing up to this point.
No, who would? No, not at all. Agree.
In respect of that flow, I should say, Champions League and watching how Arsenal have progressed in the last few years, and the fact that you know you are going to earn good money, depending on the deal, I think that there's enough to entice a top player to come because
Goretzka. Sorry.
Oh my God. Goretzka. Go and get him.
I think you can't tell me.
Well, Musa's just over there manifesting into his Goretzka. Mic, just you know saying I mean? Names, you know. Cooking up spells, you know wizardry, I mean? Dark magic over Ryan there somewhere in doing, Berlin.
Ryan somewhere doing somersaults because we've mentioned a German player. But like, if we get Goretzka is the kind of person that you cannot tell me that player wouldn't look at what Arsenal are doing and not fancy that. You can't tell me that. And there's no way.
Treat.
They will all be intrigued. And if it comes to a stage where it's money what's going to be the problem, then I'm not sure that's the right person for that dressing room, especially as young as it is. You know, that group is already on a winning mode, attain. You know what I mean? Legacy. That's where that team is. And that's why you need to make sure that the player that Arsenal are going to try and attract is experienced and of the same mind. Because that's what Arsenal need to be doing now. We can't be going backwards. You look at it now, and I hope that Mudryk, for his own sake, because I do feel sorry for him. I'm not sure if there's anybody in the history of football who's had to have a transfer of that amount of money with so much politicalness around it for him.
It's brutal, isn't it?
It's almost unfair.
Yeah, it's a perfect storm of bad luck. Like, you know, he didn't get the club he wanted. He wanted to go into a dressing room where things were moving so he could settle in. You know, the memes, football, Twitter just being really toxic about all of that, him not delivering.
Yeah.
The price, which has nothing to do with him. Let's be honest, the length of the contract, and frankly as well, the fact that you're under contract for that long, unless you renegotiate your salary, which, you know, happens a lot. It's actually, and this is going to sound quite weird to say this, but over the course of his contract, given the length of it and the amount they're paying him, by the end of his contract, he'll be below market value.
He'll be quite a way below market value.
So it's, the whole thing is pretty...
Well, this is why...
Pretty bleak, actually.
That's why we have to... I know maybe a lot of people who don't do that, but we have to pray for him, that it works out for him. For himself and for his country and everybody that he had to do that, make that signing with and everything, what's going on. He made a decision that was way above him, and I hope that somewhere along the line it works out for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, guys, the Newcastle game, done that on Sunday with Al. I was quite pleased for Al because, obviously, he's high, man. He's high right now with what's going on in respect of where Newcastle are, how they're playing. Obviously, the cup final was a bit of a disappointment. But worried, he was worried because he's worried because you look at Tottenham, you've got to worry for Tottenham simply because they've got Harry Kane and he'll score goals. They've got two games on Tottenham. And you're looking at Liverpool, there's an opportunity for Newcastle. There is an opportunity for Newcastle. We knew that Almiron's supernova form at the start of the season couldn't last. I think that was his first in 14, the winner coming off the bench. Isak, you know, got the injury before he got there. And then he came in, looked really, really impressive. But when you looked at the chances that Newcastle have missed in games before this one, you're thinking they could be so much further up the league than they are, up into fourth than they are. And they're going to have to win those two games in hand.
Do you know what baffles me, though?
What?
Right. I keep looking at the Premier League table and I don't understand how Tottenham are fourth.
Harry Kane.
I do not understand.
20 goals, 2 assists. Harry Kane. They can defend how they defend, whatever. They've got people who can score. And I'm feeling a little bit like I'm repeating myself with so many teams. Teams can't score. West Ham, you know, Newcastle up to this point can't score. You know, you're looking at so many teams. Wolves can't score.
It's just the pressure. We don't actually talk about it enough, but the actual pressure of scoring goals consistently in the Premier League.
It's tough.
When millions of people are watching every week and you're aware of all the conversation around it, we don't talk about nothing. You see certain games, not to name names because you don't want to like shame players, but players snatching at volleys, players messing up. Even this weekend, I saw some games, I was thinking, do you know, this is really interesting where actually these are just basic failures of execution. The players are willing, they're in the right position and they're just snatching at chances, slashing at them, hitting them high and wide. And you're like, actually, they're just not good enough. Is that psychologically, if you look who's actually delivering, right? Harry Kane is fearless with that stuff, right? You know, Erling Haaland could have a bad game and like finds the net. Sam Kerr, oh my God.
The movement on Sam Kerr,
you know, there's a rare breed of striker who can occupy an entire back four by themselves. Some players, it's a back five these days. But do you know what I mean? So that premium on goal
execution,
scoring.
Man. It is.
It's just for me, it's weird because when I reflect on this season and I look at the shit show that has been Tottenham's season, the fact that Conte's already got one foot out the door, he's certainly definitely not signing a new contract. There's even a fear that he'll leave before the end of the season. It's an unhappy camp, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? I cannot believe that they're still occupying fourth and behind them, Newcastle, riding the crest of a wave, obviously had a bad run in and around the cup final defeat. But still, when I think about the two different trajectories of their season, I can't believe that Newcastle haven't managed to sustain that position. No. But like you said, Ian, they have got those two games in hand and they win those. They leapfrog Spurs.
I think they've got the best defence flow. I think they've got either the best defence or one of the best defences. And that is why they're able to hang on. Because I'm telling you, when you watch games, they should have beat Manchester City at least 3-1. They should have beaten them.
That Liverpool game as well, where Pope got sent off.
Yeah, they should have beaten them. And so when you look at it, it's you think, oh, what could have been? And all you're hoping now is that Isak can continue doing what he's doing because he looked very dangerous. Almiron could come on and affect. Because whatever you say about Miggy Almiron, he tries to do the same thing every single time. And this is why before he got so much stick, because it wasn't going right when he was doing it. He's cutting inside, the ball might run away, he'd have a shot, he'd go way over the bar, he'd fall over. So, but then he had the start of season where everything was going right. And we got a glimpse into, wow, if he was consistent, that is what he would look like.
Right.
It was very, it's going to always be tough for him to continue on that trajectory. And it's the same with scoring goals in this stage of the season with certain strikers. People who have been there, you're looking at Harry Kane, who's done that. You know what I mean? You're looking at Marcus Rashford as well, who's done that. Mo Salah's done that. You know, Erling Haaland has done that. They know what side of their brain to switch onto because nothing changes for them, Moose. Whether they're at the start of the season when, oh, you've got plenty of time to get this going, or whether it's the end of the season where we're playing because I have to score because we have to win these fucking games because we have to get into Champions League. We have to win leagues and we have to win these cups and stuff. They've got the same mentality. And that's my mentality from the start of the season to the end. No goal was more important. But the fact is, you go to another level of clinicalness in your head. In training, you've got to do that. You've got
this
to take...
When Tony Cascarino was talking about moving to... He went to Celtic, I think.
Yeah.
And he was talking about going to on goal while playing for Celtic. And in his head at the time, he was just telling himself he was going to miss. Like, imagine... That's the thing. You don't really that often hear that kind of level of honesty from like a top-level striker. But Cascarino going through on goal and going like, yeah, I'm going to miss this.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And that's what's in some people's heads.
To be honest, I think that's brilliant that he's come out and said that. Because one of the things that I always think about, and when you speak to someone like Sherry, his face will probably, what did he say? You know, you say that to someone like Sheringham, Michael Owen, Andy Cole, about when you're going through, do you think you're going to miss? You've got to be in some serious state of low confidence to even a thought like that to penetrate your mind, because the mere fact that you're going through on goal, your eyes light up as a striker of a certain caliber because you think, here's my chance, bam. But when you hear somebody say that, the first thing in your mind should never be, I'm going to miss. The first thing in your mind is, where's the goalkeeper? Because you need your angle. He's got to do his angle. That's the first thing. And then the first thing in your mind is normally, the first finish that you have in your mind is normally the right one to do.
Yes.
Because the longer you go, then the options start coming. Oh shit, he's closed out. That's what happens. So the first thing you think about when you're going through, and this is why R9 was so great, man could just go through and it goes close as he wants and then say, oh, I'll just go around him now, or he'll slot it.
You know, we're going to get to this later, so I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but Sam Kerr's goal against Manchester United, the moment she takes that first touch, I looked at Mary Earps and I just thought, she's doomed.
She's dead, she's doomed.
She's doomed because you're going to go in the bottom corner. She could go bottom right. She could go over her. At that point, the moment Sam Kerr, with that body language and that energy, that intensity...
Moose,
that really is.
We are going to speak about it, but I have to, I'll speak about it again, but we can't underestimate Lauren James's pass to her as well. How far it came in the touch. But we'll talk about that. But look, before we go into
Lauren James, we're going to talk about it because Lauren James bring out different weapons.
But I think that Newcastle, hopefully.
Very dangerous.
brings out different dangerous. Weapons.
My goodness.
You know, hopefully Newcastle can understand and recognize where they are, because now what's got to happen is, the players who believe like, oh, this has been a great season, everybody's going to say, yeah, this is a great season because we could finish in the Europa League. You know, they could finish in the Conference League. They could ultimately, if they get into the right mindset, finish in the Champions League in this season, especially when we see what's happening with Liverpool, and we'll speak about them in a sec. But a player has to have a mind shift of, I've got to find it. I've got to find it. I want people to say, yeah, I am good enough, because when we get to this stage, I scored in the vital moments. And that is where Newcastle need to be, because I think that you look at them, Guimaraes, Joe Willock, Joe Linton come back, you know what I mean? Isak, the way he's playing, Callum Wilson coming off the bench, needing to prove a point, Almiron maybe hopefully getting back to the levels. You're looking at a team that have to now look at themselves, and it's attrition. How much do we want to do it? We're defending well. We've got to fucking do it now. I've got to go to another place with myself and find it. We're not going to lose this game. And I'm going to make sure I take that half chance. That's where Newcastle are for me right now. Liverpool, on the other hand, What the f- Liverpool? What's going on, lads?
Well, let's start with it. In their defence, the way they began the game, if the Van Dijk header goes in,
yeah,
it could become another onslaught because actually they played really quite well in the round. But then, listen, shout out to Solanke dropping deep and that link-up play. When he started to cook, he dropped deep and he was playing out to the wings. It was the classic. It was actually what Kane does actually so well, dropping deep, playing it, you know, wide for the wingers. And when Bournemouth really started to compress space and really just, they were really, you know, they were on top of Liverpool in midfield.
Can I say something, Moose, about the Solanke? And when you look at Firmino and you're looking at how Solanke played in that game, right. Moose, I know it was a long time ago.
Sliding doors, man.
Jesus Christ, eh? I remember watching Solanke at Liverpool thinking, no, I can't see it. And he had that unbelievable youth career at Chelsea, scoring goals, doing his stuff, went to Liverpool for that big money. And you're thinking, come on, man, can you? You're watching him in games, you're thinking, no. You watched how he played the other day with a point to prove.
Yeah.
Playing in a role that was quite similar to Firmino. You think to yourself, it's just the way it goes, man. Sometimes things just happen at the wrong
time. It's not
time
your time.
For you.
Yeah.
I think all in all, he has struggled in the last couple of years to just build that consistency.
Yeah.
I think he's always found himself being the player who puts in a stellar performance in one or two games and then kind of drifts into the background for a little bit and just can't find the consistent finishing that you need. And he's even in the Championship, like, he was at some points hitting insane numbers and then at some point struggling. And that was obviously like a level below really he should be playing
but
in as
Flo,
well.
What I would say with him is that in the youth team, he got to an elite level of goal scoring. He was fantastic. He knows what it's like to be there. He knows what it's like to be the guy that everybody expects to score. I know it's a different level, but in yourself, you know, I can do that. I can get to that consistent level of scoring. But what happened is you get to a Liverpool and then you're there. And now it's up to you to, however you're training, whatever you're doing in your mind, you're now at the place that when you're younger, you want to be. So then what you've got to do is you've got to say, right, I'm here now. Now it's got to happen. You've got to go somewhere in yourself. He's done it before. We've seen him do it. And then when he went to the Championship, he done it again, whether he had to drop down or not. But the fact is, he's got it in him. And I think the game against Liverpool is, again, he's got to look at that game and say, that's what I can do. And
that's,
you're
the
right,
level.
Flo. It's consistency.
You've got to find that. You've got to find that every weekend. That's what separates certain players from others, is that some people can turn it on and deliver that every weekend and others can't.
And some people are satisfied. I would not be satisfied. Some people are satisfied with people saying, yeah, but he's not quite. I could not fucking live with that. I could not live with, when I was coming up from the second division to the first division, all the talk was, yeah, but let's see if he can do all that stuff when he gets to the first division, to the point where you are afraid. You are afraid. And one of the things that happened with me, one of our first home game, away to Luton, and then our first home game was home to Man United, the great Man United with Robson and Hughes and Ince and all the people in it. And I played well and I scored, done. That was done for me because in my mind, I said, I can score against these teams.
Yes.
I can score against these teams. You have to play well in it and say, well, I'm good enough to play. I can't have people saying, yeah, but he can't finish. Yes, you can. And then when you get there, you go to the next level. It's not like, oh, it just happens just because you're in the team. You have to take yourself there and you have to believe you can be there. And then you have to change the narrative on, yeah, well, let's see. Bam, you do it, you're away. Solanke could have done that.
You have to end it early as well, don't you?
Absolutely.
Like, you have to hit the ground running. And obviously with Bournemouth, it's difficult because they're going to be fighting for their life in so many games this season because of, you know, where they are, who they are compared to other teams in this division. But they've had ample opportunities in games and have scored a lot of goals this season and got themselves into good positions in games and just not managed to get themselves over the line for a variety of reasons. But
they could have beaten Arsenal and Liverpool in the same week.
Yeah, they could have beaten Spurs. I think the player that I think is a standout for me for them this season is Philip Billing, who has just been consistently delivering the goods at the Championship level and has kind of gone unnoticed, but plays football like it's basketball and just kind of glides through the middle of a pitch untouched with just so much kind of magnetism and so much flair and like in such a balletic way that it's so good to watch. And still, I don't know how opposition players don't pick him up. He just kind of has that way where he can just go unnoticed, even though he's so tall. He's like 6 foot something and no one picks him up. And then he can set up an attack. He can play deep. He can play in like a 10.
Yeah, but then Flo, it's up to Bournemouth to recognize that he's got more.
They do, though. They do. They rely on him. They rely on him so much.
I've only seen him really the last few weeks. He's really been very noticeable in what he's doing and the way he's crashing into the box and stuff like that. Because it's only the other day I saw him pass one through and it went back. And then, yeah, against City. You know what I mean? He was in a position in the field where he passed one and then I think it was Phil Foden got onto it, bam, and scored. In that game, when I watched him, I wasn't seeing the same stuff. But again, for Flo, sorry to interrupt you, it comes down to a player going to a level where then they say, right, we have to play to this guy's level now. That's what's happening. You could feel like he's doing that because he was very noticeable against us for a start. Really noticeable to the point, not just because of his height, but the way he was breaking and the quality he's got. So again, I'm really on a mental kind of vibe with the players at the moment. And how much do you as an individual want to blast through to the next phase of what you may be capable of doing?
Actually, while we're on that, on blasting through to the next phase, obviously Liverpool coming off that historic win against Manchester United, the 7-0, and stumbling here. And I wonder how much you read into Henderson going out and Bajcetic coming in, because that does change the configuration a lot. That was the only sort of change, I think. They didn't get it done. And you could say, well, they were marginally unlucky, some offside calls, and the Salah penalty miss was
terrible.
Was terrible and surprising. But more generally, there's that thing where, you know, you have a huge win like that. And, you know, there's a hangover you have after a defeat and there's a hangover you have after a victory. And I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because that win came a certain point in the season and there was a huge euphoria, but it wasn't like a World Cup semi-final. It was a Premier League game, right? And it was just another game. And I think this loss to Bournemouth obviously would have got far more attention if the events off the field hadn't dominated matters. Yes. But I think maybe just this for Liverpool was a, they can win beautifully and they need to add winning ugly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
That for them is the kind of, that for them, the next stage of this, of what they're doing, this new phase is Liverpool 2.0, the Klopp, whatever, it was probably 3.0 now. He's built so many new teams at Liverpool. That's the next stage of them. It's winning ugly, isn't it? Grinding those games out.
And plus going to a Bournemouth side that knew they should have beat Arsenal. And
yeah, right.
You know what, Moose? It's interesting you say about winning like 7-0. That can have an effect on you where you think to yourself, yeah, we're close, we're back. Yeah, we're close. But then what you got to do with that, when you go to somewhere like Bournemouth, that night, that tight pitch, like 12,000 people. And yes, they missed some chances, missed the penalty, but that happens in games. You have to then switch off. It's like listening to Pep the other day saying, I'm not interested in the past now. The past is the past. This is what's happening
Bane
now.
Bane said it in The Dark Knight Rises. Victory has defeated you.
Yes.
He said it. It's it. You know,
that's what happened. Liverpool victory defeated them.
You can see it. And I'm not saying they were complacent. It's not that. It's just that you think on a trajectory where actually, you are on that trajectory, but you've got to take care of the nuts and bolts. The nuts and bolts. Yeah.
The penalty miss was one where I'm thinking, a player of that stature, away from home, it's one of those games where you're feeling like, this isn't going for us. We need to get to another place. Tony Adams would, during the game, he would get everybody to like focus, drop back 5 yards. Let's everybody dig in, fight for a bit. Let's win. Let's earn the right to play again. You feel like that didn't happen with Liverpool. And I'm telling you, if I missed away from home in a game where it was going like that, and I missed a penalty like that, I'm telling you, man, there'll be problems when I got back in that dressing room with Tony Adams. Because as a striker, you're the one who's meant to score that goal, to take the pressure off of them, and to get the confidence back in the team. When you miss in that fashion, it deflates you even more.
Right.
And gives Bournemouth even more impetus to go forward and try and get more and beat you. That's what happened. And at the moment, there's a fragility with Liverpool's mentality.
That's interesting.
The old Liverpool, yes, you missed the chances. yes, you missed the penalty, but we're good. We're going to blast you and we're going to do it like what City will do. Look at City. City are not even playing well, but they know we're going to still do it. I guarantee you, we will not see Harry Kane or Erling Haaland miss a penalty like that in this stage of the season. It won't happen.
I know we keep saying it, but they have lost one of the biggest big game players of all time. They have. Like, you think of what Sadio Mane did, right? And the penalties that man scored.
Yes.
The man scored penalties to win AFCON.
Penalties help.
For his country and take them to the World Cup. Mm-hmm. That man, you've lost that energy in the dressing room, right? And that energy goes out and, you know, you lose that. It's hard to replace that thing over the course of a few months.
I was pleased for Liverpool the other day with the Man United simply because it was the kind of result that announced we're not going nowhere. We're here. Mm. But you can't do that announcement and then lose 1-0 to Bournemouth in the manner that you did. You can't do that. So again, you have to look at it. And then you look at Man United and you think, well, yeah, there's a fragility with their mentality as well.
Because
you can't go into games playing like you've been playing, winning a cup, players playing well, everything, and then lose 7-0. Whoa.
Right.
That's weird. It's crazy. So those teams, and this is why, again, we mentioned Newcastle earlier. That's why Newcastle have to find something because this is their moment. There's something not right with them.
It's actually a weird season, to be honest. It is actually, I know we use the word on study a lot, but it is a bit of a catfish season, right? Mm. Because if you look at Mo Salah's numbers, I was having a chat with some friends. They're like, oh, like he's not getting the credit. And I was like, yeah, but he's been streaky this year. Mm. Like the distribution of Liverpool's goals in certain games has been clustered, right? It's like, this is like a kind of, it's almost like, blood clots, like there's clotting, like there's some, there's some like, there's some clots of like high activity and other bits are just nothing at all. And that's why if you look at like Man U's like league table, you'd be like, there's no way that team lost 7-0. Like, actually they did. Like it's so strange. It's on first glance, you look at the league table, oh, that's kind of where it should be. And then you look at the actual performances and go, this is a...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Spurs as well are part of that. It's like you don't, the table and the performances just don't match up this season. It's just so messy.
Totally.
And then we haven't even talked about really relegation where it's so tight. It's so tight.
We're all acting like West Ham aren't down there.
Yeah, wow. Exactly.
There's no discourse. There's been no discourse. I'm not going after West Ham. I'm not going after West Ham at all. If you just think of the quality of player they have in that dressing room, in that squad, even though Moyes may not be getting the best out of them, like the discourse has not really been there about what is happening. I don't really know. And every time I say, you know, what's happening at West Ham? You know, like Real Madrid fans on Twitter are like really quiet. Mm. You know, there's just not much noise.
Moose,
there's not really that level of noise
Moose,
about
let
what's
me tell
happening
you something.
With
there's yeah. not much noise. And you know what else there isn't? There's no fight. I can't see any fight in West Ham. Yes, you look at Declan Rice, and Declan Rice plays how he plays. He's blood and thunder. He'll mop up down there. He'll try and create up there. He'll do that. But what I'm not seeing in the team is fight. Because you know what? The people down there, all the way up to Palace, all the way up to, I think it's 12, 27 points. Everybody from the bottom to Palace on 27 points, they better be ready to fucking fight.
Right.
Because that's what's going to do it now. Yes, you're going to still need people to nick that goal. Because you look at Palace can't score. Palace can defend, but Palace can't score. I saw them really keep Manchester City at bay the other day. And such a poor challenge from Michael Olise. They get, and then that's it. Erling Haaland
scoring. We've seen this with Palace before, though. I really feel like that is a team that is, and this is, I have to say this in Vieira's defense, I feel like he has coached them to the edge of their capabilities. I've seen them dominate, like we've seen them before, we've seen them dominate like teams with far more resources, right? And just not have the finishing touch and just not have the firepower.
Yeah.
And I do think it's as simple as that.
I think when you look at Olise, Eze, Zaha, it's up front, it's Odson Edouard, it's Mateta, you know, it's Ayew. Between those three, between Eze, Zaha and Olise, there should be more
service.
There should be more going on with them. There should be more interlinking. We should be seeing more beauty. There's too much beauty in that threesome for
right,
us
right.
to be not seeing stuff. Even if he goes direct, even if he says, right, Mateta, stay up there. But these three are going to cook in here. You lot fucking defend. Decore, you stay in there. Nothing gets past you. What's got to happen is let Eze, Olise and Zaha do their stuff in a structured kind of way. Yes, we still have to do, we still have to make sure that we're covering here and recovering there. But when it goes in there, you lot, I want more intertwined.
Because the quality's there, yes.
Stop.
But I think it comes back to what we said with Billing and Solanke, which is when you're down there, that championship side of you is what is tested most. And I think Elise is certainly struggling with that right now, is you have to tap into your championship best every single weekend. This cannot be something that you only find in certain moments. Yeah, there has to be right. consistency, and that has to be matched with the desire, the work rate, everything. And I don't think a lot of those players are putting that in right now. And that's the biggest concern for Vieira. When you've got players who are switched off, who are close to tapping out, you have to be really worried about how you get them back in, especially if they haven't been in that position before. And they've also sometimes been coasting as well because they're that talented.
But it just comes back to pressure though. We know I keep banging this drum, but I would love to have a conversation, not about the art of finishing from perspective of technique, but the mental side. We've talked briefly about it now and again, and you know, you've talked about like going cold in the box, but that level of fear, I mean, of course, no current striker is going to talk about fear because it's not good for business. You'll reduce your market value to go and say, actually, I'm terrified when I play up front. But I think actually, I would love to have a conversation with like retired strikers about terror.
The terror is real.
You're through on goal, 70,000 people are chanting things that are not in your best interests. Mm. Let's be frank. Let's put it politely.
Yeah, but Moose, no, Moose, what happens is, when the opposing player goes through and he's through, you can almost feel the silence. You can feel it because they're like, oh, fuck. Because remember, they're getting ready to see somebody score. So the cheer after they miss is the elation. It's like a goal. Because when you're, I remember, and can I just finish on this? I'm just going to finish on giving myself something. Liverpool.
Shock.
Liverpool away. Liverpool away. And this is why it's come back to me now that Moose has said it, running through 70,000, Liverpool, a full Anfield. And you go through from the halfway line and it's an unerring silence. There's a silence that's not meant to be in a stadium with so many people. So then all of a sudden, you recognize where you are. There's no one chasing. There's someone chasing me, but he's not going to catch me. I'm now going to stare down David James. You know what I mean? I have a look to see if the linesman, am I offside? This is how afraid I am. I'm actually thinking in my head, is he going to call me offside and save me from this? But then I said, I look across. He doesn't save me. So now I have to go through and save myself. And David James came out. He went down too low. And I lifted it over him. It just hit the top of him and went into the net. And that was an amazing feeling because
the quest
it's only
was complete.
Afterwards. Yes.
The hero's journey was complete.
Done. It was done at Anfield. So Liverpool know I can score against them at their place in a full house. That's what fear. And that's what these players need to do. They need to go to that place and they need to look Thanos in the eye.
I will never tire. I will never tire of hearing you talk through goals, man.
Honestly,
never tire of
but like Moose, it's true because you get it's a silence.
No, last week was the best when Ian was like talking about some goal against Newcastle or something. I was like, I don't even know why I'm talking about this anyway. I just need to talk about it. I just need to reference it. Never in doubt.
Chelsea, Man United, WSL flow, Moose. I watched that game and I was intrigued. Mm. I was intrigued simply because I'm thinking, right, Man United, you need to come here and put down a marker saying, yeah, we're serious. We're trying to get into this top three and we're going to come here. We're going to cause you problems. We know that Emma Hayes has got no problem with possession going to the other team. None at all. We saw what happened to them in the final with Arsenal. I think it was 63%, 37. But listening to Mark Skinner's interview afterwards and when I watched that game, and watched Man United and how they played with the possession. Sorry, nowhere near enough. Didn't do nowhere near enough. Mark Skinner was saying we had a lapse and, you know, the quality of Sam Kerr, you know, she scored a goal. I saw Sam Kerr go through twice. Mary Herbst saved them on a couple of occasions.
Maybe three times,
yes.
Really.
Yes.
Two times before the goal and then at the start of the second half, yes. Millie yes. Bright, bang, same again.
Yeah. Don't make excuses, Mark Skinner, because in that game, Chelsea had your number. For a start, you know, listening to the substitutions, you know, the substitutions like bringing off Nikita Paris and bringing on Aoife Mannion is not, for me, a decision that is saying that you're trying to win this game, a game that you have to win, especially as Nikita nearly got a penalty, which, if I'm going to be totally honest, Maybe they should have got it.
I think the Anya Batie one was more of a penalty when Carter comes and takes her out than the Paris one.
But that one could have easily been given Flo.
Yeah, it could have been given. But
what I'm saying is that he's got to own the fact that tactically and the subs-wise, he got it wrong. And Chelsea, if it weren't for Mary Earps...
Chelsea went by a big margin, a big margin.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was, I think, actually, Flo, like, great job on counter-press discussing this and breaking this game down. You're completely right the way you looked at it there. Chelsea soaked up pressure and hit them. And the thing is, the quality of chance Chelsea created, they got so many good looks.
Yeah.
You saw when Manchester United got in any kind of decent position, they were not good looks. They were getting, like, what, out on the sort of inside right area, angled shots some distance. You're not going to be a keeper of that quality from there. And it was really just their build-up play. Like, it was almost like Chelsea did so much more with, I say less because Chelsea have great resources, but Chelsea did substantially more with less.
Sam Kerr could have got a hat-trick.
Yeah.
Yeah, bam, everybody, what would he have said then? His interview afterwards was a little bit disrespectful because he said, we've come to the home of the champions and we've dominated. I was like, come on.
No, bro. I didn't. No, that's not the impression.
You got to watch that interview.
But the performance and the manner is what you do with the ball, right?
Yeah.
And I just don't think he did anything that was very effective with it. And United do really rely on Ella Toon and Alessio Russo, and that's fine because lots of players rely on individual big players. But you can't be so one-dimensional that there's no way to mix things up when things aren't working.
Yeah.
And I think they rely so much on Anya Batie on that right-hand side, and it wasn't working for her either. And Chelsea didn't really have to do much to mix things up. And at the same time, Skinner didn't then mix things up himself defensively to try and mitigate against those Chelsea long balls that they were hitting
constantly.
Chelsea
got what they wanted.
It was a breeze. And I think going into this, people expected it to be a little bit cagey, a little bit tense, because essentially both teams really just didn't want to lose more than anything because they knew this head-to-head is going to be vital. Yeah. But at the same time, if you're Mark Skinner, like you say, Ian, your record against Chelsea is poor, you've never beaten them, this is your best chance at a title we've seen. You've been top of the table before, but you've never been there still in March at this point, then you have to go for it. You have to risk it all because otherwise you lose the game and now everything is in Chelsea's hands because they've got a game in hand and it looks like, yet again, they're going to cruise to a fourth consecutive WSL title. So you have to bring more. You have to lay a glove on Chelsea. And when you look at how they capitulated against Arsenal, which there's so many things that feed into that. There's naivety from Emma Hayes. There's a mental side that Chelsea have tapped into in other games before in similar situations. But you can kind of see a blueprint of like how we might be able to ruffle a few feathers, how we might be able to press and put pressure on Chelsea and force some mistakes from someone like Buchanan, who hasn't looked comfortable this entire season. But United never did that. Chelsea never pressed, but United didn't try and get up in their face and force something from the game.
I think actually with Emma Hayes, what I'd say about this in terms of tactically, the problems for her, I think the problem solving against Arsenal came out with an intensity, I think, that was bewildering, actually. I think that really threw, in terms of her tactical schemes, I think they just came with that intensity that maybe she thought that her players would match. What was interesting here, we saw Lauren James, obviously, a few games ago, and she was doing that incredible diagonal run, coming in field, beating players, scoring, assisting. And then, obviously, Arsenal closed off that channel. And so now here, you see she's drawing for something else, right? She's drawing for the longbow instead of the cutlass. And then she's standing off people and hurting you from that deep, like, that deep-lying position. That diagonal is brutal. Like, there's very few footballers that have the two gifts that can hurt you at close quarters and from distance.
And distance, yeah.
Lauren James was 40 yards away and she was devastating.
Moose, I'm looking at someone like Mark Skinner. And the reason why I'm kind of going in on Mark Skinner a bit is because if you watch the Conte Cup, you can see that what Arsenal done was they had a quite a high line themselves. Arsenal. But what was happening was Leah Valti, whenever the ball was going, getting ready to get across to Lauren James, she was there.
Yes.
They stopped them at source. I'm thinking, Mark Skinner has not done that because when you look at the amount of times that Sam Kerr was in the diagonal ball, they're not even stopping the source. So what was the game plan?
He's
talking about
money.
We dominated. Yeah. It was just a case of she's going to be free in a second and she's going to do it.
Yeah.
And then she will score. And then the goal she did score, like, you know, we mentioned earlier, Moose, but the goal that Sam Kerr scored,
goodness,
runs are amazing.
The touch.
Oh. The touch. It killed Mary Earps.
I wish she'd scored the chance that she got at the start of the second half, because the touch on that was even better than that goal. That one would have been. If she'd scored both of those goals, honestly, I don't know how she does it, because every single time.
It's a clinic.
You think, maybe Sam Kerr's off the pace. She just brings out the most ridiculous, blockbuster, sensational goals.
The control on that. The thing is. The goal, I tell you when the goal was scored, when the touch finished.
Yeah.
Because now Mary Earps, like I keep saying to people with the goalkeepers, they've got to react on that touch before the final touch. Yeah. Because that's the one whether they can narrow the angle or they can go and smother. The touch was so good, stopped Mary Earps in her tracks.
Yeah.
And then all she had to do was lift it over.
The deal was done.
And that is where the elite and the top draw players, no matter how many chances, people say, yeah, she misses a lot. When it comes down to it, she's scoring, because the natural instincts and the natural ability and the elite ability comes to the fore.
She's so locked in, isn't she? It was
beautiful to watch, because like I say, again, Mary Earps was magnificent.
Yep.
And I think that if you look at a lot of the games, what Man United are playing, Mary Earps has made some very, very crucial saves.
Right.
So I think that, yes, that's her job to do that. But I think that Mark Skinner needs to have a proper look and reality check on what's going on with his team. I believe that that team could do a lot more. Mm. He needs to, again, let them off their leash a bit, bro.
The quality is there. The quality is definitely there. The next level might be psychological, actually.
While we're chatting about WSL, I just do want to shout out Bunny Shaw, because on the weekend, she scored her 25th and 26th goals of the season.
Jesus.
And she broke the record for the number of goals for Manchester City in a single season. And it's only March. She's got 14 in the league. We knew she was coming. Head and shoulders above any other number nine right now. She is so, so, so good. So, yeah, I feel
you talk about movement.
Yeah.
If City are going to qualify for the Champions League, which they look in a good position to do, and potentially deliver more, it's down to Bunny Shaw. And I'm excited to see her at the World Cup. I'm just so excited to see what she's going to do, see her thrive. And she's a great person and a great personality. So
Jamaica.
You talk about thriving, actually. There's the two goals that she scores are really interesting, right? Because one of them comes, incredible reverse pass, great interplay. And she's just there. She's like constantly, the moment the ball enters the box, she's constantly live looking for space. You see her win as well, her late winner is very interesting, because the ball is in and around the box for actually quite a while, right?
Yes.
And they're trying to clear it and this and that. And she's just always navigating. Mm. Navigating space. It's like watching one of those huge roundabouts, right? One of those huge roundabouts, and that car that is just like ready to just like come into the flow of it. And everyone else is bewildered, and there's that car just like easing through. And that's her energy. She's not even at her peak.
She's missed a lot of chances this season. She could have another 10 on what she's got right now. That's what I believe. Mm. Like the Arsenal game, she could have had a hat trick. Yeah. The game at the weekend, she could have had 3 or 4. Like, she hasn't even reached.
But this is what
peak.
I'm saying, Flo, about when a striker goes to the place like, I remember watching Andy Cole go to the place. He recognizes, I can score more goals, man. I can score loads of goals. And then he turned into a surgeon.
Yes.
He turned into a surgeon.
Give me an idea of what the place looks like. What is it? Is it like a beach? Are there trees? Are there rainbows? What does the place look like in your head?
What, the place of elite strikers?
Yeah, the world of elite strikers. Are there bunny rabbits just hopping around? I mean, what is it?
Hello, Bert. Hello, Scott.
Yeah, but there's bunny rabbits and that stuff hopping around, but they're elite bunny rabbits. So everything, like if you go in there, everything's elite, because that's where you are. You're in a place of pure elitism. So everything you see, even the tree's elite. You know, the grass, my God, this is elite grass. It's pure elitism, because it's not an easy place to get to. So when you get there, it's striker heaven.
Technicolor everything.
Everything, Moose. And that's where, when Bunny Shaw gets there,
it's done. It's game over.
Can you imagine if you're a striker, you've got 26 goals and you go back through your head and you think, I could have 36 goals. Nobody scores every single chance, but If you are more focused on every single chance, you've got more chance of taking the chance. Because remember, there's games where you go in, you're thinking your goal, what you're going to score is. When I'm going into a game, I'm going into a game thinking, right, if I get half a yard, I'm going to make sure I'm going to get my shot off, I'm going to do this. You're not thinking about, oh, I'm going to get half a yard and flick the header. Or you're not thinking, oh, the ball's going to bounce off someone and I'm going to tap it in. That's the bonus. So you get the bonus and then you think, right, I haven't even got my chance yet. So that's when you focus in on getting a chance. So then you say, I could score two in this game, three. That's why, what do you think you see when strikers are getting taken off on two? They're vexed.
Right, yeah.
Stop it, managers, stop doing that. Let him score the hat trick, then take him off to the applause.
Let them cook.
Jesus Christ, I'm so tired of this. I'm going to manage. I'm going to stop him. Guys, I think I've got to go.
Yeah, we got to go. We got to get out of here. We got to get to the elite place.
I'm going to go to the I wonder if I can ever get to the elite place of golf. I don't think
You're on a quest.
I'm on a quest. I'm going to the range when we finish here. So I'm going to have to throw you guys out. I'm still going to stop throwing people out of my house. I'm going to say, listen, it's time for you lot to go because my missus is coming back.
You can escort me off the premises.
Yeah, I'm going to escort you off. Thank you very much, Flo. Thank you very much, Moose. We'll see you soon.
See you soon.
Pleasure. Absolutely.
Thanks for coming in, man. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. I'm really enjoying this stage of the season. This is what it's about. This is what we're watching for. Of course, the stuff that happens before gets you to this place. So I'm going to start showing off because my team's in the place, baby, and I want us to finish it. So good luck, Arsenal, for the rest of the week.